Tonight we're going to learn a very, very important piece in Vigadita by Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky on this week's parasha, Parashas Vayigash. The pasuk in the parasha says, "V'asha'am hevir oisei la'arim, miktzei gevol mitzrayim ad katzeu." That, you know, on the iPhones or on the music, what do you call the little, the music, what? No, the... The well, the thing used to be, like years ago, you would listen to music. Anyway, what?
iPod?
iPod?
A tape.
Anyway, they had something called a shuffle, right? A shuffle, yeah. Music shuffle,
just
what's that?
No.
So they had a shuffle mode, right? That, what does that mean? You basically take music and you randomly shuffle it, and then you can listen to it in different ways. Yosef basically put in the entire Mitzrayim on shuffle mode. He moved one part of the country all the way to the other part of the country, and north to south, east to west, and everywhere in between were moved around and shuffled and juggled. Why? Why did he do that? Laidia shivchei shel Yosef. This is telling us the praise of Yosef, Rashi says, sheniskaven lahasir cherpa me'alechav. Why did he do this? Why did he make these massive transfers of... Remember, he took over Mitzrayim. He owned Mitzrayim lock, stock, and barrel through the selling of wheat. He owned them as slaves. And he basically was able to tell them anything that he would want, and they did it. So he basically moved everybody. Imagine all the people in New York had to go to California. All the people in Texas were now... moved to Detroit, and the people in Ohio were moved to Indiana. Why? Why was he doing this? So Rashi says the rationale of Yosef to do such a funny thing was because he had the Shivim Nefesh that came down to Mitzrayim, his brother, his sister, his father, and all those 70 Nefesh, they were going to, if they would just come to Mitzrayim, they would feel like Goyim, they would feel like refugees, like immigrants, like greenhorns, like people that didn't have a place in society. He didn't want them to feel that way. So what he did was he moved everybody around. The entire country was shuffled just so that they all feel like nomads. They all feel like they don't have any roots anywhere. I move you to, you know, to Nebraska, you're going to feel like a Gaila yourself. So the Shivim Nefesh that were Gaelim, that were people that were refugees, they weren't feeling any different than everybody else. Everybody in the whole country felt equally like they didn't belong where they were. They had no roots, and therefore now the Shivim Nefesh of Klal Yisrael could now feel comfortable. Anyone have any problem with that without looking further in Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky? What's the problem with that?
How is that fair to those other people?
How's it fair to the other people? And isn't this a little bit extreme? There must be like an easier way to do this. You know, to make everybody meshuggah just so that the Shivim Nefesh feels comfortable. It's such an over-exaggeration of your power. It doesn't seem to shtim like what you're doing. For it's not fair to everybody else. Why does everybody else have to suffer? And is it worth it? Like, is it worth all of that effort just so that 70 people feel comfortable, feel at home? Zokter Yaakov Galinsky v'yesh l'havanem k'dei l'mnoya ini mus mishuvim nefesh. Does it make sense that these 70, they may feel a little uncomfortable for a couple of weeks, you know, until they get accustomated to, adjusted to the new client, to the new culture. But because of that inimus, because of that minor discomfort of feeling like a gaila, feeling like a refugee for a little bit, how long? They'll fit in pretty quickly. Especially Yosef was, you know, they had pretty good protection coming in. They weren't completely strangers. They had a good person on their team, the vice president. So for that, ma'avirim rivavais alofim miktzei gevol mitzrayim ad katzeu, for that, ini mus, it's kedai to scatter and to shuffle and to move around all of the millions of Egyptians? I think that's a great question. Something that a thinking person would ask. But he says, we'll move on to Einzu Shela. But the answer is that it's not a question. It seemed to be a good question, but now we're going to show how this question is not a question. And if we have this question, if this question would dawn on us, it would be because we don't understand the kayach of Klal Yisrael. Ki bereshis bara lekim es hashamayim es haaretz b'shvil Yisrael shnikru reshis. The first, the Rashi at the beginning of the Chumash, one of the first Rashis, that bereshis is b'shvil Yisrael shnikru reshis. The whole world was created for Klal Yisrael, who are called reshis. V'akol b'shvil Yisrael, everything is for Klal Yisrael. Gemara and Yevamos. V'amru shekol olam nivra ela b'shvil tzadik. The entire world was created for tzadikim. There's a famous Rambam that everybody should know. He writes this in the Hakdamas Perash HaMishnayis. The Rambam wrote a Pirish HaMishnayis. Everybody knows the Rambam in Yad HaChazakah. You probably heard of the Mari Nevuchim, the Guide to the Perplexed. But every Mishnah in Shas, if you look in the back of a Gemara or you look in a set of Mishnayis, they will all have a Pirish HaMishnayis La Rambam. The Rambam wrote a Pirish HaMishnayis. The truth is that people are not Medayik in the Hebrew of the Pirish HaMishnayis, because Pirish HaMishnayis is really a translation. He wrote it originally in Arabic, and it was translated from Arabic by a big scholar into Lashon HaKodesh. But when something is translated, you can't really be medayik so well from it, because who knows if the translation is really good. Translation... All of them? No, the Ram, the Yad HaChazak was Hebrew, was written in Hebrew. I think the Mari Nevuchim probably was translated. It was translated.
The one thing about that, I have no time for visitors. They were cleansing and he said, I have no time for visitors.
Yeah, the letters were probably translated, yeah.
Well, I'm saying the letter about him having no time.
Oh, but, was written to the translator, Ibn Tibun. Right, is that what you're talking about? Shmuel ibn Tibun. There was a world famous translator. His name was Ibn Tibun, and he translated a few things. Him and his father, I think, there's Shmuel ibn Tibun and Yehuda ibn Tibun. But they translated the Mari Nevuchim. They translated Chavetz Halvavus, I think, also, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, but there was a few. They translated a few classics into Lashon HaKodesh from Aramaic. But the point is, Pirush HaMishnayis was one of the things the Rambam wrote. In the Hakdama to the Pirush HaMishnayis, the Rambam writes something very famous. Sheyitachein melech ader yishtageya. It's possible, says the Rambam, that a king, a great king, will go a little crazy. V'yitzava livnais ir bira b'emtza midbar. And suddenly, in the middle of a desert, he'll say, you know what, this is where I want to build myself a castle. Rivavais payalam yisnalu b'shayarais v'yaviyu chamrei b'ninu v'ivnu ir l'talpiyas. He builds a whole, not just a castle, he builds a whole city in the middle of a midbar. Think Las Vegas, right? Las Vegas is a place that's in the middle of a midbar. Some guy comes along and says, I want to build a whole city. It's going to be gambling. It's going to be geschmack. And that's what they did. They built in the middle of a desert a city, and they made it it's a tremendous, tremendous business there. So he said, the Rambam says there's going to be a king. He goes, he has an act of insanity, moment of insanity. He says, I want to build in the middle of a desert a whole city. Okay, the king says it. What are you going to do? You can't argue with the guy. So they bring caravans and bulldozer and schlepping, bricks and mortar and glass and stone and everything out in the middle of the midbar with millions of workers building and digging and Vashigayin nisha shigayin. Ha'ir niznecha vispara v'haisla li'ye charavis. And this insanity just remained in insanity. Basically, nobody really inhabited the city. Nobody wanted to move out into the desert. There was no air conditioning. And basically, the city just dissolved. It sort of just disintegrated. It wasn't really anything left of it because no one moved there. It was just a figment of his imagination. It was a mirage. He built it, and it just was a failure. Raketa min ha-chayma ha-nisa'a sarad, but there was like one wall that remained intact. Everything else just sort of as time passed, just disintegrated. But there was a wall that remained. Zeich l'tiferes ha-hazaya, as a remembrance of the glory of the vision. V'chavar shanim rabbis, and as many years passed, Yisnael tzadik baderach. A tzaddik, a little yidolo, is going to walk on this in the desert. Vashemesh tikapach al reishai, and the sun is going to be beating on his head, schwitzing. V'yishava lematzel, and he wants a little bit of shelter, a little shade to take some rest and relaxation in the comfort of some shade. V'yimtzes kerchem, lo and behold, he's walking in the desert, and there's like this wall, this abandoned, what was once a magnificent castle, structure, edifice, it's all gone, but there was a wall there. Yechse betzila v'yashiv ruchai. So he goes and he snuggles up under the shade and the comfort, and he's able to have a little menuchas ha-nefesh. Says the Rambam, v'shvil kairas ruach zu, nivnisa b'shaita ha'ir kula. We never understood, historians never were able to understand what was the purpose of this king building this big city. Until 300 years later, a single yid, the little rabbi with a long beard and some payas, walks by. He takes a little snooze for half an hour by the shade of one of the last walls of this once glorious structure. And now, the Rambam says, now I understand what this whole thing was for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put this Mishigas into this king's brain hundreds of years earlier just so that a Yid is able to get Hana from it. It reminds me of, has anyone ever been to Newport, Rhode Island?
Even? No, my parents went.
What?
My parents went.
Oh. That's not you.
Those are the mansions?
What?
The mansions,
the breakers, they're called. So if you go to Newport, there's two famous things in Newport, Rhode Island. There's the Turo Synagogue, which is no relation, but there's it's the earliest shul in America, a very, very interesting shul. In the back of the shul, there's a big, it's not the original letter, but it's a blown-up letter that George Washington sent to the Jews of Newport, telling them about, you know, how they're welcome here and they'll have religious freedoms. And it was built by Sfardim, by the early Sfardish people that came to these shores. And there's a cemetery also in Newport. There's a famous poem that's written about that cemetery, if anyone knows what I'm talking about, by one of the great poets. Had to write a report for one of my kids on it. Forgot what the poet's name was, but anyone have Google? What? He's a very, very famous poem, any poet. Anyway, so that's one thing in Newport. And then there's another thing in Newport, which is the breakers. The breakers are these huge mansions that they're on the water, beautiful shoreline of Newport. And they were built by this big gevirim. Each one had their own. They built themselves like monuments. And you go into one of them, I guess it's the most famous one, I think it was built by Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt was like the big, big gevir of his time. He was like the Bill Gates of his time. And he built this mansion, an unbelievable mansion. And it had all the modern amenities. I guess he lived in the 1800s. But so there wasn't electricity or there wasn't a lot of the things, but he had like stone and marble flown in not flown, shipped in from France and from Italy and from Chvez, and the finest artisans, and they had paintings painted all over the walls, and he had like a contraption by his bed that you press a button and it would ring, before electricity, but he had like these things that were the cutting edge of society, of technology at the time, but masterpieces of architecture overlooking the water. And it was he built it, and then I think it took a long time to build, and he got very sick. He died there, I think, but he literally never got a moment's worth of hana'ah from that massive structure, because he got sick, he wasn't able to get any hana'ah. But who does get hana'ah from that? Yidden, right? Who goes on these vacations, Chalamayid or whatever, you go to the Torah synagogue and then you go to the Breakers. So basically, he built this monstrosity of a mansion so that a couple of Yidden, like myself, could go on Chalamayit trips, take their family and break some matzahs in the Breakers, and that's the point of it all. If somebody that wasn't Jewish was sitting in this room, they wouldn't like what I'm saying, because it sounds very, egotistical, very heliocentric, maybe, like we're the center of the universe and everybody is really, doing everything that they're doing just for us. And that might very well be, but that's the Hashkafas HaTorah. I wouldn't say this, in front of Gayim, but this is the Hashkafas HaTorah. This is Hashkafa 101. That Bereshis, you can't get away from it. You might be, if you're a liberal and whatever, if you believe in Chazal, you can't get away from this Yisayin. That Bereshis is Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Reshis. This entire universe, you look out the Manhattan skyline with all of the, amazing skyscrapers, one taller than the other, one more modern and sleeker than the other, more with more modern amenities than the other, each trying to vie for, breaking records of height and it's all for Klal Yisrael. Somehow, we don't know how. It might be that Jews are living in those buildings. It might be that there are offices that Jews are working in that building. It might be that there's, that a Yid is going to be able to, in a rainstorm, be able to go into the lobby to take some shelter from the rain in those buildings. That's why those buildings were built. That's why there's a mishigas that a guy had to build a skyscraper in Midtown Manhattan, because there's a Yid that's going to need to take shelter in that skyscraper. Do you believe what I'm saying? If you believe what I'm saying, then you will appreciate what a Yid is. If you don't believe what I'm saying, then you'll be forgiven, because it's very understandable. It's very hard to believe that all the great structures that we see in the world, all the great corporations, all the great technology, all the great medical breakthroughs, all of the, all the art and all the science and all the poetry and the art and the music and everything was created for Klal Yisrael somehow, some way, for our enjoyment or for our use. And the Goyim get to use it as well, but collaterally. Collaterally, if Goyim would understand what a Yid is, they wouldn't be taking machetes to them and at a Hanukkah party and trying to destroy them. They wouldn't be trying to kill 6 million, because they would understand that what they get in life is because of Klal Yisrael. There's a Gemara like this. I think it's a Chazal. There's a Medrash that says that Eilahem. Woe is to the nations. They went and destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and they didn't understand how good the Beis HaMikdash was for them. They thought that they were just burning down a holy temple of the Jews, but they didn't understand how much benefit they got from the Beis HaMikdash. We brought karbanis that protected them and that made them more prosperous. They didn't understand that, so they went and destroyed what they thought was an act of violence against Jews, but it was really an act of violence against themselves. And that's really what a Yid is. A Yid is somebody that the entire world is getting hana'ah from. They're getting direct hana'ah from Yidden, because Yidden are the ones that, I was just thinking like as I was walking from my car, it's very possible that this guy that was wielding a machete, or the guys in Jersey City, or Yimach Shemam, But it's very shocking. They were using Waze to get to their destination, because everybody in the world uses Waze. Waze is a Jewish invention. Is some Israelis invented Waze in Eretz Yisrael, and then
polio vaccines.
Polio vaccines, and I'm not saying most, but you know what, all the guy, if you look up online, you see all of the conspiracy theorists and all the people that are trying to, you know, say how Jews control the world. They're not that off. They're not that off. I mean, we don't like to admit it, and we won't admit it, problem, but, you know, Hollywood was started by Jews, and the banks were started by Jews, and the technology, a lot of the technology companies were started, a lot of the musicians, a lot of the great scientists, the great artists, the great poets, the great writers, they were all Jewish. Not all of them, obviously. I don't think Shakespeare was Jewish, but he could have been. Everybody, the major people in life, we're a very small percentage, and the amount of Nobel Prize. Anyway, but we don't have to get that specific in how great we are. But what is important to know is that for us, the world was created. This entire world was created for Klal Yisrael. It might make us uncomfortable, that notion of feeling like so, you know, chosen, but that's the reality, and you can't get away from it. As much as sometimes we want to feel like, you know, let's not be so great. Let's be more like the Goyim. Let's sort of just like, I don't want to be so outstanding. I'd rather just like sort of just mix into society more comfortably, so we're not such a target. But the reality is that we are, because there is the understanding, and people do know this. Goyim know this, and they might, and it breeds a lot of anti-Semitism, but Goyim know that there's something special about the Jews. We're eternal. We survived. We're here, we're strong, we're powerful. And it's very, very noticeable, and it's the truth. It's not an accident that we're still here. He brings a Gemara. We're not going to have time to speak about this Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Let's see the end of this piece. It's on 623 on the bottom. The Asaper. We were in the DP camps, the displaced persons camp in Germany. Now, this was after the war. They didn't have svarim. They basically were barely alive. But this yid by the name of Rabbi Shmuel Yaakov Rose brought one day into the camp one single volume of Gemara. Hayu Elam Masechtas Nedarim VeKedushin Kruchas Yachad. In this volume, says Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, the two Masechtas, Nedarim and Kedushin, were bound together in one volume. Eizet Simayin Haya, Eizet Shteikas, Eizet Snaplas. You know, if we're not too excited to learn Gemara, it's because we have Gemaras, and we have Seder every day, and we have Daf Yomi, and we have, which we'll get to soon. But it's not a big deal. Gemaras are here. You go into Rabbi Shmuelitz's office, you know, there's 100 abandoned Gemaras on the shelves in that room. If it's last month's Gemara, I don't want to even take it home with me. What am I going to do with it? There's a million Gemaras. Baruch Hashem, we live in times that it's not. Imagine for a second, close your eyes and imagine that 7 years passed and you were not able to look at a Gemara once. Not a Gemara, not a Rashi, not a Taisus, not a Ran, not a Ritva, not a Marsha, nothing. That's what these Jews went through, and many of them loved learning Gemara, and it was denied them all these years. So they finally are reintroduced to a Gemara with Nedarim and Kedushin in it, and people were going crazy. They were like, I need that. That's what I need right now. Be'ein Breira, Perku Es HaKricha, V'chilku Es Mesech L'Dap and Tam. But it looked like people were like grabbing at the Gemaras. It was like going to, you know, Best Buy on Black Friday, and, you know, with one thing left on the shelf, and everybody's like grabbing for it and killing each other for it. That's what was going on with these Gemaras, with this one Gemara. Everybody was like, so they had no Brera. You know what they did? They took the Gemara and they ripped it apart page by page. So you got Daf Beis, you got Daf Gimel, you got Daf Dalet. Everybody got one Daf of Gemara. Kalecha b'daf, v'shinenu b'kazeh hislavas. And they learn with such a hislavas The Achakach Echlif, and then they switched them. So Beis gave it to Gimel, Gimel gave it to Hey, etc. Ech bera belat hechen adaf haba, ve'efa adaf shalafana, v'em efshar rak lahatz, it's luris ech maskala inyan, ve'echen mistayim. And this is what Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky remembers so clearly. They were all going crazy for this Gemara. U'mehechen egia krach soli de Rav Rose. How did Rabbi Rose get this one volume? Bismichas, near the DP camp that they were in, haye beis chel tzvoi v'chel ha'machaneh shohu bayit. There was like a hospital, like an army hospital, and the people that were sick from the camps went to that hospital. Beis hachalim hayim emukam b'mivneh shal minzar naitzin. And this hospital was set up in some sort of monastery, like a Christian monastery. B'samach lo'i hayim beis tefus germani. And next door to it, there was a German publisher, like a German printer. And one day, the owner of this print shop came into the hospital. And he saw that there were a lot of Jews in the hospital. He said, you know, by the way, I don't know if anyone's interested, but in the basement of the monastery that this hospital once was, there's a lot of Jewish books down there. I don't know. No one's using it. Maybe you're interested in taking them. Haralanu, show them to us, Bikshu. Miher v'chazim krach mitach shasvil. And he came up with one volume from a Vilna Shas. Meseches Kedushin and Adarim. Miyad he sebu l'shir gemar mechaye nefashis. Harav Roz, Rav Shmuel Abba Snirg, Zatzal. Afu mechanik ha-slabot kevod. A few rabbis gathered around. Ukachaniche Slabotka, these were people, men that learned in Slabotka, Ivinush, Aslam Laksitai Latsmam. They can't just hoard this safer to themselves. They can't, they're Musarniks, you have to share. Varav Rose Halachalamachane, Vizika, Meya Vishum Yehudim Limit Gemara. There were 170 Dafim in these two Gemaras combined, and each Yid, 170 Yidin were Zaycha to learn Gemara because of this find. Veloyamru Dai. They asked the owner of the print shop, would you by any chance have the ability in your store to duplicate these svarim? Can you make copies and publish them? They made a cheshbon of how many copies would be needed. Chashuv v'gadol. They decided that they would get a shas together, maybe it was still in that basement, and they would make copies, tens of thousands of copies, or 10,000 copies of every mesechta. It's a lot, right? It's a big run. German marks, 10,000. These were not Rockefellers that were in this camp, these Jews. These were people that have nothing, literally nothing, not a shirt on their back. How are they going to get 10,000 German marks? Zimna lema hashkocha al yayna shlichei varat sol amerikai. So hashkocha kicked in, and the representative of the varat sol, the American hatzola system that went to try to save and to help rescue Jews in Europe, Reb Shmuel Schmidt, Shachishev and Matzah Shchum says Zeyal Shloish Meis Dollar Bilvad. Wasn't such a big deal. The German mark was very cheap. My father, Elav Shalom, used to tell us that after the war, it was so the inflation was so high in Germany that you would literally to buy a loaf of bread, it could be like a million German marks. It was like very. After World War II, it was very, very. It was so devaluated, the German mark. It wasn't such a big deal. So it was $300, which is a lot in those days, but not for that amount of printing.
They burnt it because of people and firewood.
Oh, right. V'sigam mikarnes vadhatzala. $300 they were able to find in the vadhatzala budget. Matzut Sayer Miplete Machane Shetzir Aman Ashar. They found an artist who drew an Aman Ashar. Ubayam Mut. I have at home, by the way, one volume of from this Shas. Ubayam, it's called the Survivor Shas, a very famous set of Shas that you'll find, like they sell them in auctions. But they had there's a drawing on the cover of the famous, you know, pillars in the front of a Gemara. Hatal hamachushmalim va'arubas hamisrafes upasuk hanetzah. There is an eternal pasuk. Kimat kiluni ba'aretz. I was already almost destroyed in the ground. Vanila azavti pekudach. But I never abandoned your laws. Pasuk in Tehillim. That was inscribed on the Sharblat, on the front page of the Gemara. Osfas adapma pzurim v'edfisum. So they got back, they gathered back all of these pages that were scattered amongst the camp, and they bound them. Uma'at, they published it. Umat mat itru oidvayd mesechtas. They were able to not just do kedushin and nedarim, but they got others. V'edfisus kalashas. The joint, that was azel afitz mechala machanis. The joint was also another organization that helped after the war reestablish Yidden. This is like an abandoned monastery in the middle of Germany. How did that volume of Nedarim and Kedushin land there? How did it get there? It just like flew there on its own? And how did the printer go and discover that dungeon in that monastery? Vegilas haKrach and revealed the Krach. Vaydila Chayim Yehudim, and then he told the Chayim Yehudim about it, the sick Jews in the hospital. Upaschu imem Masomatan and started wheeling and dealing with him, with them. Ubederach Mikra Nikol Lashem Shliach Vadatzala, and just it happens to be that a Vadatzala ambassador comes with money. All these things are not, this is not coincidence. This is divine hashkacha. Baruch Shemasra Elam Elishayim. There are people that go and do things, and they think that they're doing it for themselves, but really what they're doing is for Klal Yisrael. They're doing everything for Klal Yisrael. Everything that happens in the world is for Klal Yisrael. I think this is a beautiful shtickle in general. I think it's very appropriate to learn the shtickle the night before the Siyum HaShas. I think it's important also to recognize that the Siyum HaShas is anyone going, by the way, tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem? Okay, so the Siyum HaShas is being held in MetLife Stadium. And it's an interesting thing that the owner of MetLife Stadium is a Jew. And he always, every 7.5 years, I mean, this is the second time, but he loves signing up the Siyum HaShas because he knows that it's something extremely special, and he might even know that that was ultimately the purpose of him having this Mishigas to build the entire MetLife Stadium. And it was. Now, you know, you go to MetLife Stadium, you think, well, this is the Giants. This is like the temple that people, you know, go and worship the Giants and, you know, during the football season, and people are, you know, this is MetLife Stadium. It's one of the largest stadiums in the country, in the world maybe. It can hold 90,000 people. This is not for a bunch of Jews every 7.5 years. But that's because we don't really believe this piece in Rabbi Yaakov. We believe that the world is the world. It starts with the world. There's a football stadium that was built for, you know, for football fans and it holds a very large amount of people, and the ikur tachlis of that football stadium is football. Once they built it, now, oh wow, we need a place to make a Siyum HaShas. Great, let's make it in MetLife Stadium. That's what, you know, we could use the theaters of the Gayim, the stadiums of the Gayim. Everyone like goes crazy. It's a Kiyum of the Haftacha of this and the Gemaras that say that the future is going to have the theaters and the stadiums turn into a place of Avodas Hashem. But the truth is that it's the opposite. That's selling the Rabbeinu Shlom short. By saying that we're really using it's MetLife Stadium, rah rah rah, and we're going to use it. We're going to be mekadesh the stadium. That's I don't think that's Lashkafas HaTorah. The Hashgavas HaTorah is MetLife Stadium was built for the CMHS. We let the Goyim use the stadium 7.5 years in between. But the main tachlis is the Rabbeinu Shalom put a mishagas into a guy's head to build a huge stadium because the Rabbeinu Shalom knew that there was, that Klal Yisrael was bursting at the seams and they needed a new venue because we outgrew the Continental Arena, we outgrew Madison Square Garden, we outgrew the Felt Forum, which was the places that they used to make it, and even those at the time was crazy to fill up. And maybe the Rabbi Hashem is building a, you know, putting a mishagas as we speak into somebody's head to build one that'll hold 200,000 people.
Here's the Barclay.
So that's the Hashgavas HaTorah. When you go, those of you that are going tomorrow to MetLife Stadium, and I think if you, the guys that are not going, try to get tickets tonight. Go. I'm telling you, you will not regret. You will not regret going. You will not regret going. I know it's expensive, and I know it's a, you know, it's going to be hard to get. Even if you go to the Barclays, it's also good. But you, there's something very, and I think I've been talking about this until I'm blue in the face, but it's very important that you be a part of Klal Yisrael. There's history tomorrow being made. You want to be a part of it. You want to be able to tell your children, your grandchildren, I was at 2020, I was in MetLife Stadium. I was at the Barclays. I was part of the movement.
I think they have it
online.
Oh.
Okay. But that's the Hashgavas HaTorah. Hashgavas HaTorah is whatever you see in the world. And it's a funny thing because they look at you like you're crazy. Somebody once said, there was a gadol that said that the reason why the airplane was made, you know, what was the airplane? What do you mean, why the airplane was made? Airplanes were made, you know, for war. Airplanes were made for traveling. There was millions of passengers every day traveling around the world in airplanes. What do you mean, why was the airplane made? So a great gadol, I'm not sure, it may have been Rechatzkel Abramsky, somebody said, the reason why the airplane was made was because Rav Aaron Cutler was Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood, and he was Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, in his Shver's Yeshiva, Eitz Chaim. And he had to go from one place to another to give shiurim. So they built an airplane. The Rabbi Shalom put a mishagas in these Wright brothers' heads to build an airplane. The airplane flew. And they built upon the technology until they were able to get it really big and with seats in it and to make commercial airfare. But it wasn't for everybody. It was for one yid, Rav Aaron Cutler, to be able to go from America to Eretz Yisrael and back and forth to give shir in Torah. And because of that one man, billions of people are recipients of that hatava that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave. Now, if you tell this to any, forget about Gaim, you tell it to Yidin, go to speak to Balabatim and tell them this. They will literally pick you up, they will put a white jacket on you, tie you up, you know, and ship you to Bellevue or some Meshuggah hospital because you're crazy. It mamish sounds like you sound insane. But that's Hashgavas HaTorah. This whole world was made for us. It's just the reality. It's just the reality. The world was made for Torah and made for Klal Yisrael. The CMHS is a great example. The airplane's a great example. The skyscrapers are a great example. That building that this melech built in the middle of a desert for a tzaddik to come, and Yosef HaTzaddik to be able to move and shuffle the whole deck of Mitzrayim for 70 yidden. It doesn't seem normal. But that's how the whole world operates. The whole world is billions and billions of people all working and building and progressing and all for Klal Yisrael, all for the Rabbeinu Shlom's chosen people, for the Torah, for just to be able to bring this world closer to its ultimate potential, and Amitz Hashem to the Vias Kayal Tzedek, Meher B'Yameinu Amin B'Amin.